This week, the party continued on Wall Street, and Gold Seek sponsor Seabridge Gold blasted higher by 30% this week alone. The Dow Jones added another 430 points. Hello and welcome, everyone. Chris Waltzek, great to be back with you again. We've got another big show with two top market professionals. The Alpha Stocks newsletter registered explosive gains this week. Four out of five of our weekly candidates moved sharply higher against the backdrop of a much more solid stock market. My proprietary algorithm, combined with fundamental models, seemed to be operating like Kasparov and Deep Blue. You might recall the IBM matchup. The IBM supercomputer, and the world chess grandmaster, Garry Kasparov. I like to think of the Alpha Stocks newsletter service as having both on the side of my subscribers, giving you a nearly unbeatable combination and opportunity to improve overall portfolio returns. Joining me on the show this week, head of the Trends Research Institute, Gerald Celente, outlines a less than sanguine economic outlook. He thinks an economic depression could develop due in part to stagnant wages and shadow unemployment, but he's still a gold aficionado. He thinks portfolio insurance could skyrocket, boosting demand for the precious metals. Next up, senior investment strategist at Institutional Advisors and I discuss the first U.S. coin minted back in 1794. It sold at auction for about $5 million, illustrating some of the wealth-preserving properties of the precious metals. He suggests that every investor own gold as insurance against the unexpected, and we've certainly seen a lot of that lately, haven't we? And Robert Ian is enjoying a much-deserved sabbatical this week, but he says to expect another must-hear installment in the next show. And we'd like for you to sign up for our toll-free hotline, 1-206-66-65-370. It's not toll-free. You can call if you'd like to. Remain anonymous if you prefer. 1-206-66-65-370. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the market weather recap. Mostly sunny weather appeared over the New York COMEX exchange for the third week running as investors turned instead to the U.S. dollar and U.S. equities on news of dovish global central bank policy. Gold gave back a small amount, just $14, about 1%, finishing at $11.62. That after weeks of advances. Silver lost just 20 cents, about 1% as well, finishing at around $15.83 an ounce. The XAU gold and silver equities index, though, bucked the trend, gaining 0.5%, finishing at 56. That's just taking a second week to catch its breath following that 14% weekly advance. West Texas Intermediate crude dropped, though, $3, off about 6.5%, finishing at $44.60 per barrel. On the heels of the best weekly gold rally in months, investors took just a few profits off the table this week amid a forceful dollar rally. On Friday, the U.S. Flash Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index unexpectedly climbed to 54 in October from about 53 in September, indicating increased economic expansion. In addition, news that the PBOC announced a surprise rate cut increased demand for the greenback. Still, the gold ETF holdings in gold-backed funds are near the highest level since the summer, with institutional money managers making bullish bets amid increased global financial volatility. In related news, silver bullion is so scarce that several mints around the globe are placing quotas on supply. The Royal Canadian Mint, Australia's Perth Mint, and the British Royal Mint, as well as the U.S. Mint, are rationing the distribution of silver coins due to manufacturing-related supply issues, reportedly. According to the Silver Institute, the widespread quotas are uncommon, but typically take place near market nadirs. Solid news for the bulls. Next week, the FOMC meeting is set to announce its benchmark lending rate decision. The announcement is slated for 2 p.m. on Thursday. The current federal funds futures contract indicates virtually no chance of a rate hike next week, about 5% at the next two-day meeting on October 27th and 28th. The December Fed Funds futures contract also suggests just less than a 40% chance of a rate hike before the end of this year. That's the last meeting of the year. Investors will be watching for signs closely and the Bank of Japan's monetary meeting that occurs on October 30th. In related news, the U.S. Treasury has only a 2-week deadline to increase the U.S. federal spending limit, also called the debt ceiling, by November 3rd. Otherwise, a shutdown is imminent. Nevertheless, each previous deadline was met by a spending boost, so there's little reason to expect an actual government stoppage. Investors will be watching congressional hearings and commentary for hints of legislators' intentions over the next several weeks. Precious metals, bottom line. Well, gold stocks performed well again for the third week running with Seabridge Gold, ticker SA, a Gold Seek Radio and Gold Seek sponsor and advertiser on this show, blasting higher by 30% in 1 week. And then, of course, Newmont Mines added 3%. Gold Corp added another 1.5% to last week's 11%. And one of my favorite alpha stock newsletter, Gold Companies, picked up 5% in just 2 weeks and is poised for, I think, an explosive move of 50 to 100%. So, alpha stock subscribers, be sure and log into your account. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility virtually unlimited over the New York Stock Exchange this week. Investors added U.S. shares to their portfolios for the fourth week running on continued news of less than sanguine economic reports, which decreased the likelihood of a Fed rate hike until next year. The Dow held above the 17,000 threshold for the second week running, ending near 17,646. Picking up 430 points, about 2.5% in a single week, while the S&P 500 finished at 2075, up 42, 2%, and the NASDAQ picked up 145 points, 3%, ending over that 5,000 point for the first time in months. Well, stocks rallied on Friday following reports of a surprise interest rate cut from the People's Bank of China. The central bank of the second largest global economy lowered the one-year deposit rate by a quarter point, down to 1.5%, and the one-year lending rate also dropped a quarter point, down to 4.35%. The Chinese central bank's decision to cut rates followed comments from the EU economic leader that additional rate cuts could be forthcoming. The EU has already taken unprecedented steps to shore up economic conditions by lowering its discount benchmark lending rate to negative 0.2% for the first time in history that a major lending institution has taken rates below zero, at least as far as I can find. How far will policymakers go below zero? To absolute zero, perhaps? Stay tuned to Gold Seek Radio. Plus, we're pleased to announce that two of our favorite Alpha Stock newsletter candidates blasted higher this week following better-than-expected earnings from major tech stocks, including one of my picks, Microsoft Corp, which just flew higher, shares of Amazon, AMZN, my favorite online retailer, and technically bigger now than Walmart, blasted higher by over 6% on surprise operating profits, plus Microsoft over 11% this week after better-than-expected profits and revenues late Thursday. Then Twitter, TWTR, up about 4% on news that the chief executive officer would give away about 200 million of his own shares, 1%, to the employee stock pool. Hat tip to him and to all those lucky new shareholders. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, the seven-component sentiment index blasted out of the extremely fearful zone into the neutral zone, and prices in the major indices mostly finished near the weekly highs. While the VIX index has been crushed for nearly two solid months, then the equities indexes really have regained, I think, their former trading ranges before the mini crash. So, now it looks like the onus is on the shoulders on the bulls to push the indexes to new highs. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. We'd like for you to stay with us right here at GoldSeek. Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant cave KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Bob Hoy. He's advised institutional clients for over three decades as editor and chief investment strategist. Welcome back.
Chris, good to be with you and good to be with your listeners.
It's always a pleasure having you back, and we're glad you can make time for us today. I know you're writing and researching at the desk right now, so maybe that's a great time to talk about an interesting little anecdote here in the precious metals community. I thought we'd start off today. A coin from 1794, you may have read, the first dollar in the United States, actually, silver dollar, that is. This is the first silver dollar ever minted, sold for $4,993,750 in a private collection, and the coin was first owned by a British aristocrat, and it was minted in Philadelphia. So much for the barbarous relic status, huh?
Yes, indeed. Was that at auction?
It was at auction, and $5 million if we round up a few bucks.
The rarity of it.
Doesn't hurt that it's silver, too.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's an interesting segue into what I wanted to talk about today. I found another article here by Koos Jansen. We're talking about the Shanghai Gold Exchange, which, as we all know, is one of these facilitating exchanges, which actually does its intended purpose, and that is ships gold, delivers gold. Well, we just find out that they shipped a record 2,000 tons at the latest reading as China continues to buy heavily, you know, during price smackdowns. And I just like your thoughts on what's going on here and the significance of the Shanghai Exchange.
The demand for gold in uncertain times is appropriate, but I think this is because of its unique liquidity. I think the extreme demand for gold in order to make money out of getting even with the dreadful Federal Reserve System and its depreciation policies, that peaked out in 2011, and it could be a long time before it comes back. So our view is that everyone should own some gold as insurance, and you'll only make money out of it if the currency you live in is going down. And you have the condition in a post-bubble world where the senior currency remains chronically firm against most other currencies and most commodities for most of the time. So this suggests a new paradigm for gold, and actually the new paradigm has been on since 2011. We've been talking about it since then, where eventually the demand for gold's unique liquidity becomes very important, but forget trying to make money out of it in U.S. dollars. So, and these auctions will be interesting, but that's an exceptionally precious coin. And we continue to look at that. Now, what we have recently here, the U.S. dollar had been weakening since the summer as various parts of the financial world got hit. You had, maybe it was some of the hot money taking itself home and getting out of the S&P or getting out of treasuries or getting out of junk bonds in the U.S. market and then taking the money home. But beginning a couple of days ago, actually Wednesday, yesterday, there was kind of a reversal during the day and stocks sold off as the dollar firmed up a little. So whether the firming up of the dollar had anything to do with anticipating Mario Draghi's announcement overnight, our time, we don't know. But today is an exceptional day in the stock market, with the Dow being up a little more than 300 points. all on news, and it's been in a rally here. If you don't mind, the Dow is a good one to talk about now, because that's the one we were doing the work on, whereby at this point of the declining market, you know, it set its high back in May using the S&P, it became oversold going into October 2nd with that horrible unemployment number. And we understand, of course, that the employment numbers are rigged all to hell, but nonetheless, it was a bad one. And there was a lot of pressure on stocks and low-grade bonds at that moment. And so you'd expect a relief rally once the bad news was out about employment. But then the Federal Reserve and the Treasury stepped in with a lot of repo operations in the Treasury market. And I understand it was the greatest intrusion, even much greater than anything they did in 2008. So you had a natural short covering rebound turned into a horrendous short squeeze. But in using the Dow, we had the upper Keltner band would be the target on the rebound, which was at... let me look at it. Yeah, 17,505 this week, and so far it's virtually there. It's the Dow's at 17,400 and something rather. So, essentially, the rebound likely at this time of year for the Dow has been reached. Getting some pretty good. You're getting some. A very good momentum swing from it being exceptionally oversold on August the 24th, Black Monday, to now, getting a little overbought. But what we look at in that momentum thing is the is how far it's traversed from being exceptionally oversold. So let's put it this way. The stock market rallied to a level that has been possible, but it's still vulnerable. There'll be other...
Certainly on the same page with you regarding the U.S. equities situation. I think there was considerable technical damage done, and this rally you're seeing here is just, and we have been experiencing, as some backing and filling. And if we do continue to consolidate under resistance levels, which I'm seeing in virtually all the indices, I suspect we will see continued liquidation. You know, this is the time of year we usually do find a solid footing on the market. But I think that seasonals might be trumped this year.
I was laughing with my colleague earlier today and wondering if, following the disaster on October 2nd, you had the Fed do the repo. Then you had overnight the Eurobank coming out and renewing its vows to be reckless. So that then leaves the Bank of Japan to do something totally bizarre by the end of the month. So I wonder if these interventionist announcements themselves are seasonal. I mean, by now, most central bankers know that you can have financial problems in September and October, which we have been, seeing. But what we used here was not so much the seasonal. We noticed in 2007 that when the senior stock index took out the 50-week moving average, that was the official kind of thing that turned the market down. But then the initial decline in the market, or the intermediate decline in the market, lasted about 4 months. So that then counts out to November. So we have had this kind of count going on where maybe there could be a good low in November. But on the in-between one, we had to have the bounce on the Dow up to 17,500, which were virtually there. So I think this is clearing the way for another slide. The unemployment number that came out on October 2nd was so bad that, they had to do something. So... And that's just not going to be 1 month bad, because there are other things not so good, industrial production numbers, commodities, particularly base metals remain weak. And crude oil did a nice rally right up to the 200-day moving average at 50 and weakening. And we've been looking for crude oil can do a seasonal decline down into late December, early January. And copper can do a seasonal decline into October, into November, which we're getting. So we don't see too much stuff around friendly for the stock market other than this rebound that could be getting tired right now. Gold's on that sector, which is one that we like for the longer term. We were looking for stability in the sector. You know, the bear market has been on since 2011. And we were looking for that stability in, like, taking the gold stocks, GDX, and dividing it by the bullion price. And we needed that to be going up, and breaking through the 50-day moving average would be very positive, which it did do a couple of weeks ago. So actually, the moment it popped above the 50-day, that was positive for stocks, and you've had a nice rally across the board. And but again, this you also would want to see further stability in the gold price itself. And we're looking at, this is, I think, a cyclical bottom for the gold sector. And this would be appropriate because we're getting past the cyclical top for the orthodox side of investments, i.e. stocks and junk bonds, if I can say that orthodox investments would include junk bonds. And it did include, to many people's regret, commodities. You know, up until 2011, the big houses were recommending that institutions carry 5 or 6% weighting in commodities. Well, I mean, that's been a disaster, and they didn't seem to realize that one of the features of a post-bubble contraction, and the big bubble was 2007. That had many of the characteristics of 1929 or previous bubbles like 1873. So although what we've had since the crash ended in 2009 has been yet another bubble. Sure, it's the timing similar to the rebound that ended in 1937, but you know, that was a very vigorous rebound. And this one rebounded to incredible highs because the Federal Reserve, I mean, the central bankers, they live in an unreal world. It may be logical in their from their perspective, but it doesn't fit with the real world. And so they have this bizarre idea that if they expand credit, it will result in an expansion of business and GDP, which is, in logical terms, is a primitive syllogism. That's just because two things happen at the same time. They happen to be a business expansion goes with a credit expansion, but to say one causes the other is highly dangerous. So what we have is going on is, but it's not been going into GDP, at least rather weakly. Instead, it's going into stocks and, until last year, low-grade bonds. And they don't see that as inflation. In the central banking mentality, inflation is rising consumer prices. And inflation and financial assets doesn't exist. So they keep going on saying, well, it's safe to be reckless because there's no inflation. And you've had magnificent inflation in junk bond prices, very much over. And you've had fabulous inflation in stock prices. We've been saying, well, it was in July 23rd, noted that the bull market was probably over, And then our July 27th piece came out with, we said that institutional advisors initiates coverage of Wells Fargo Bank. Gosh, it peaked almost about that week, as did the other banks. Stocks, the BKX index, and they've come down rather nicely here. So I think that since July, the bull market has been over, and once you had the Shanghai crash down to August 24th, we've had the rebound, and then the next leg down, we've got the target of the low set on August 24th for the senior indexes. And that's now our next objective on that. So then I know that our listeners are always interested in the precious metals, and we started off with your comment about the first silver dollar minted trading for, what did you say, $5 million? Incredible. So at any rate, silver and gold, there's an interaction between the two that's been on for a few hundred years, and we call it the metallic credit spread. And when you're in a boom, the gold-silver ratio goes down because silver outperforms gold. And when you're in a contraction, it goes the other way, and silver goes down relative to gold. And it turns with the regular credit spreads, like the difference between high-yield bonds and investment-grade bonds, or even prime corporates.
Bob, is this on a weekly or a daily basis?
Most of the time the trends are obvious and run for a few months. But you can see it sometimes intraday when you get some excitement going on. As a matter of fact, one of the telltale warnings on going into a bad financial market is one day suddenly silver could be down 1 or 2% with gold not much changed.
And that's probably due to the industrial demand?
I've been pushing the gold, analyzing the gold-silver ratio since the 70s. And it is astounding that they can trade minute by minute together when you get this going on. That if you're going into financial pressures, as I said, you'll have a day where there was one 2 days ago where all of a sudden silver got whacked relative to gold. And so this then is gold-silver ratio is an important indicator. So whereas you get many people in the precious metal side say that you got to buy the silver, it's the poor man's gold and all that sort of stuff. And then also silver lends itself very well to supply-demand analysis, and there are researchers out there that can tell you almost the last ounce where all the silver is or where all the gold is. But since we've been advising mining companies, which actually goes back to 1976, the main story we have is that you can't make any money out of analyzing supply and demand on any metal, and you're better off to look to see its own behavior patterns within the business cycle or the credit market cycle. And one of the things that about gold and silver is very reliable is that silver will, if it sharply drops relative to gold, like in here over the next few weeks, that would signal another phase of credit concerns. So our view is that when you're going into financial storm, the serious money will position in gold because of the liquidity, and it won't position in silver because it isn't as liquid. I guess that's as simple as you could put it.
Very good. Well, keeping with this precious metals theme, I wonder if you might comment on the head of Tocqueville, John Hathaway's recent comments that he expects this global drain, as he calls it, of precious metals from the Western nations to the Eastern nations to resolve itself with an enormous and catastrophic short squeeze in the markets. Can you put a time frame?
That's intriguing. Thanks for bringing it up, because I missed that one. It adds a little drama to the view that I have, is that in the next phase of the credit crisis, the investment demand for gold will surge because it is a unique liquidity. The other thing that scared serious money does in a storm, it buys treasury bills in the senior currency, which happens to be still the U.S. dollar. So this is why, I think this is the main explanation of why the T-bill rate and the Fed funds rate is effectively at zero, because of the, people just parking their money there. And people that buy treasury bills and the concern money that positions in gold in anticipation of a storm are not buying positioning to make money. They're positioning so they can, in an item that's so liquid they can get it out when they want to go the other way. And so it's the liquidity that counts. And one over time could see that demand for physical gold and the investment demand continuing to increase, because the way we look at it, and which is the way the financial markets, like back years ago, I sat down and actually by hand calculated the average real price of gold as deflated by the consumer price index, originally in England and then later in beginning of the 1930s in the U.S., and it tells a story, and that is that the price of gold, once the financial mania is over, which was 2007, that its real price goes up for as long as it takes to wash out all of the excesses in the credit market. And that's usually been about 20 or 25 years. So, and then within this, you have the change in the business cycle, where during the business, the upside of the business cycle, where we've been since 2009, orthodox investments are more attractive than gold, which since 2011, that's been confirmed. And then when you're in each of the contraction phases, of course, that's when the real price of gold goes up, where, like, for example, it's very clear now you had the high for crude oil at $107 a year ago in June 2014, and it's been down as low, below 50, and that represents energy cost, and you're operating a mine, you're going to be using a lot of energy, blasting agents, various forms of power, running the equipment, even the cost of tires reflects energy, that sort of stuff. So we're into the phase now where the global economy is weakening, base metal commodity prices are weak, and they're very weak relative to gold. So this, underneath it all, the real price of gold is improving, and that will eventually flow through to a given operation on a mine that is, say, constant head grades and nothing else changing. So then you have your cost. Then also with depressed conditions in base metals, they've been shutting down base metal mines, and that frees up labor as well, and it also puts a lid on wage costs. So as difficult as it is, each post-bubble deflation has eventually been very good for the gold mining industry. And you even, Chris, you take a look at back on the history of the great gold rushes, 1895, that was the depression bottom. 1840s in California, the depression bottom was 1845. The gold discovery was 1849. And all the way back, the Great Depression bottoms have been associated with gold rushes, and the gold rushes happen because you've had a maybe 15 or 20 year trend of increasing real prices, and then you've also had the trend of higher and higher unemployment in a contraction. So then you've got the number of unemployed men and a very high real price for gold, and they go out and find it. So, of course, the depression bottom that ended in the mid-1940s, World War II, was a great distortion, and you did not have a gold rush in that depression bottom. But maybe the next depression bottom will be a gold rush. And I'll leave you with looking forward to when the juniors are flying again, and they will at some point really fly.
Well, that's a great way to wrap up today. And if you had to pick one top metric for the turnaround, the nadir, the bottom in the precious metals, let's call it ongoing correction here.
In a deflationary bubble, gold will outperform silver, and it outperforms copper. Or a deflationary contraction, gold outperforms everything. But on the rallies, brief rallies, sure, you're going to have the silver kick in, and silver will rally on brief rallies faster than gold. And, of course, that's what we used to get out back in 2011. We used the RSI, the daily RSI on the silver-gold ratio. And whenever it gets above 78, it shows that the speculation is becoming pretty compulsive. And in 2011, it got up to 92. And we knew that the only time it had ever been there was in January of 1980. So we pointed out that was the case. It was like 1980.
Well, hat tip for that, but Bob, does it work in reverse? Because we've had our top, we need our bottom here.
Oh, yeah, we've been trying to get that, but there's not the equivalent. It was just more like, as I said, we want to have the gold shares outperforming the bullion. That had rising above the 50-day moving average, and that happened 3 weeks ago. So this is very positive. It needs to be tested to conclude the bottom for the sector. That would be gold stocks and gold. And then at times, if the big market like the S&P is getting hit, gold shares will get hit. But I would say a year from now, gold stocks will be quite a bit higher than they have been recently.
Obviously, the extremes on the downside that we saw in the mining and related shares were just to levels unseen in decades.
Chris, I've been in a number of bear markets for the precious metals, and always the one you're in is the worst. But I was talking to one of my buddies my age. He's been in the game as long, mining engineer, very successful in discoveries. And his company has a drilled-off property, good one, and any number of targets, other properties after that. They're ideal. They've also got money. So my friend was telling me last week, he says, we're getting people, good guys, good geologists, with good prospects coming to us saying, please take it off our hands at any cost. I just can't stand it anymore. I got to get out. Now, he doesn't recall that happening on previous bear market lows. So maybe we can say that this has been the worst one.
Briefly, are there any particular securities, ETFs, that you would be adding to a portfolio right now for our listeners?
Yeah, you could do some shorts on ETFs, on S&P, stuff like that. Bank stocks, yes, definitely bank stocks. And the ETFs for exploration stocks, GDXJ in the States and Ziggy in Toronto, those can be traded. You've got a better liquidity in those than you have in your favorite junior stock that's sitting there dead. And if you take a look at, say, just GDXJ, over the last year, there's some very good trades in there, up or down. And you don't want to throw your whole wad at it, but, you know, if you do a trade and a couple of weeks later it can cover, either long or short, it soon adds up to making a little money. And that's the way to do it, to doing a few trades. So there we are.
Very good. Well, Bob, why don't you tell folks more about Institutional Advisors, please?
Yeah, well, we've been in the business of doing research on equities, on metals, on all commodities, currencies, and for a long time, and have put together some models that work for us. And you can get into the website, institutionaladvisors.com. Go on for an introductory basis for maybe 4 or 5 weeks, and then decide whether you want to take it on a subscription.
Bob Hoy, another excellent installment filled with cuisine for cogitation. We'll look forward to having you back on the show, sir.
Good to be with you, Chris.
Well, Gerald Celente, director of the Trends Research Institute, his team produces the Trends Journal, hard-hitting, in-depth analyses. Everybody needs a copy on the economic, social, political, and cultural trends. Welcome back, Gerald Celente.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Great to have you back. And you know, the latest Trends Journal, another big winner. What is the most important bit of topicality?
Well, the two big issues, of course, are geopolitics and economics. And on the economic front, it's very clear we're heading into a global recession. They keep using this lame term that the Fed and other central banks are concerned about low inflation. And all of a sudden, inflation is a great thing to have. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Earn less money and pay more to buy everything. That's supposed to be good. So they're all saying we have to get inflation rates above the level of 2%. In Europe, the 2% inflation rate came about when they formed the Euro group, the monetary union. And the 2% rate was one that you were not supposed to exceed because inflation was always running rampant. Now they've used that as a benchmark to hit. And what it is, it's not deflation. Could anybody say depression?
Democracy is dead. The Greeks created it, and maybe their country is witness to the end of democracy.
Well, again, as I said, geopolitics and economics. We saw back in July, the Greek people voted 62% against the austerity measures. Now, let's understand, just like I said, this isn't deflation, it's depression. Prices are going down because people don't have money to buy things, and there's too much supply and not enough demand. On the Greeks with the austerity measures, that's lingo for raising taxes, selling off expensive public assets called privatization to their buddies at bargain basement prices, cut social programs, which people paid in for, increase the retirement age till after you're dead, and all this to pay back banks that made a bad deal. You and I can make a bad deal, and we get that. That's sorry, but not when the banks, they're different. So going back to the Greeks killed democracy, 62% of the people voted against it, the austerity measures, in a referendum. And then the government, which is still the ruling government, said, we could care less what you voted against. So what they did is not only did they defy what the people wanted, they imposed even more extensive austerity measures than the people voted against. So in the Trends Journal, we go from that to geopolitics, what's going on in the world with Syria, Libya, Egypt, to Russia, Ukraine, but giving different viewpoints and analysis. So they put out propaganda. So whether it's that, whether it's looking at the new energies coming about, or changes in health, fitness, nutrition, and opportunities for people to seize on and dangers to avoid as we're going in to a very turbulent time.
Your leadoff story, 7 years, the rigging game, volatility increasing, market fallout. The gist of it is we've seen this wonderful bull market since about 2009. It seems to be getting a bit rocky here, volatility increasing markedly. 7 years of the powers that be holding up, propping the market, using everything in their playbook to hold this house of cards together. We're starting to see a few of the cards fall off the top, and the rigging might be over. Give us an idea of what you see.
You know, there's a real possibility. Even former Fed chairman was starting to send out the trial balloon of negative interest rates.
Right now in the EU, dabbling a bit with a few of the benchmark in the European Central Union, I give you my money, and I pay you for the opportunity.
Right. So if you put $100 in, you'll get back maybe 96 because you're a nice guy and I like you. You can't make this up. This has never happened in world history. You're looking at interest rates that never existed before. Since the British sterling was invented, they never had these kind of low interest rates. What is 16 something, you know, 17th century.
What we, I think, consider the modern central banking edifice really morphed out of the Bank of England. I mean, it all started with a stick torn in half. You had two pieces of stock. One piece was given to one part of the other to the bank. And ever since then, it has just morphed out of control. And here we are today, since the dropping of the Glass-Steagall Act.
It's called fascism. It's the merger of state and corporate powers. It's a multinational takeover. Look at the new Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. The only thing we know about it is coming out from WikiLeaks. We, the people, are not allowed to see a secret agreement that gives multinationals more rights over sovereign nations, sovereign states, and sovereign cities. So what it is, it goes back to, it's fascism. It's the corporations, the multinationals, run government. They own the government. It's not a revolving door. Look at what they're going to put in now for the FDA. He's a shill from the pharmaceutical industry. Ties are right there for everybody to look at. Look at the woman who's in the SEC, Mary Jo White. Where'd she come from? BS. She came from a Wall Street firm. That, look at that other guy, Eric Holder. Remember him, the attorney general? Yeah, not one head rolled on Wall Street after being convicted of felonies. Where is he now? He's back in a big Wall Street firm that protects the banksters. How about Ben Bernanke, former head of the Federal Reserve? Read his parts of his new book. He admits that they were caught off guard by the panic of 08, a term, by the way, that we coined in 2007 and took the domain name out in. They didn't see it coming. Who's he working for now? Oh, one of the biggest hedge funds in America, Citadel.
The Peace and Prosperity Conference, Occupy Peace Rally in Colonial Kingston, New York. That's your stomping ground. With you, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts and several speakers. Do you mind giving us an overview of just what you put together here?
What a conference. It was, the video, by the way, is available. It'll be available on Friday. And this is a must-see. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, former Assistant Treasury Secretary under Reagan, never travels anywhere. He came to this conference. He's asked to speak all over the world. He was giving insights, observations, and analysis that the crowd was stunned. And people came from as far as Australia to attend this conference. And the fellow from Australia said to me, if I just heard that, it would have been well worth the trip and the expenses. If I just heard Dr. Paul Craig Roberts.
You know, these weren't exactly light seats. I mean, we're talking $900 to $1,100 per person. So people were really serious about getting this information, and you can attend it with just a video.
Yes, and it'll be available. It'll be on Friday. It's very affordable. And then we followed it with the Occupy Peace rally on Sunday. And we had, what a lineup. And anybody could go to that website, occupypeace.us, and they could watch a little short video of it. First rate. No, there's never been a peace movement like this one. Dr. Robert Thurman, Uma Thurman's father, very into a Buddhist, renowned Buddhist. Gary Null from New York City, a real top guy. And he spoke at the conference as well. Cindy Sheehan was there. And Cindy Sheehan, of course, is the woman who lost her son in Iraq and protested out front of George Bush's ranch for weeks, if not months. And Ralph Nader. It was a scene to behold. And anybody, again, could go to Occupy Peace, watch the video, and if they want to donate to the movement, it's the only movement that has an action plan. And it's to bring home the troops, close the bases overseas, and rebuild America, and force Congress to vote to go to war, which they have not done. The United States, by the way, is in violation, as we speak, of international law, as we're dropping bombs in Syria. And it's against the UN, it's against international law. Congress hasn't voted for it, and the dictator-in-chief decides what he wants to do. So we've lost it in this country. So what Occupy Peace wants to do is to bring it back, to honor the founding fathers and no foreign entanglements. The United States has spent more money in 2015 dollars, adjusted for inflation, than we did in the Marshall Plan in Afghanistan. We spent more in Afghanistan than the Marshall Plan. We spent about $62 billion, giving to the military-industrial complex to, quote, train the Afghan forces. We're there in the longest war in America for 14 years. We destroyed the country, destroyed Iraq. No, the world is not better off without Saddam Hussein. There was no ISIS when Saddam Hussein was there. No, the world is not better without Muammar Gaddafi. The place was the richest place in Libya, was the richest country in Africa, and they never did anything to us. And you know, to wage that war, Gaddafi must go. How about Syria? Assad must go. Syria was the most prosperous nation in the Middle East outside of Israel. They're highly educated people. Destroyed. For what? So what I would like to, the question I want to pose to everyone listening, show me a victory. Show me a victory. It's as inefficient and inept as every other losing agency, from FDA to USDA to FDA. The reason I'm saying these things is because I want to rebuild America. This country's rotting. Let's take the troops, have them rebuild our rotted infrastructure rather than building highways in Afghanistan. Let's use that money to bring America back to the land of opportunity rather than giving it to the few who are making all this dough and building hatred around the world for countries that we're occupying. This isn't a pacifist movement. I'm a close combat practitioner. I'm not a pacifist. I mind my own business. You know, if somebody tries to attack me, I'll attack them. But I mind my own business. I want to rebuild America. I want to make America the country that brought our ancestors here because of what it provided. And now we're losing it, and we can see why we're losing it. So this isn't one of those, oh, let's ohm and pray and wish. No, this is an action plan. Enough. Let's move on to it and build the country rather than building other nations.
Okay, on the theme of moving on, I'd like to talk a little bit about the precious metals. Since the equities collapse, if you will, or increase, let's call it increase in volatility. Let's spin it nice. Since the increase in volatility on Wall Street and the New York Stock Exchange, clearly the precious metals have found their footing. Okay, it's the last couple of weeks, particularly good for the metals, and we're starting to hear some pretty scary stuff come from, the retail sector here in the U.S., among other sluggish economic indicators. Do you expect this rigging, as you will, the seven-year rigging thing, as that starts to implode, people start to recognize, wait a minute, why don't I have some portfolio insurance?
You got it, and that's what's going on. I mean, you're seeing gold prices moving back, you know, to levels they've been, you know, that they haven't seen for a while, as the global economies go into recession. And what's going to happen? All right, let's suppose, for example, that you live in Brazil or you live in Ghana, and you've seen your currency devalue 40, 25, 30%. And gold is based in dollars. What would you rather have? Gold or your Brazilian real, your Turkish lira. So what you're going to start seeing is as all of these currencies continue to get bashed, and don't forget, they're only stabilizing now because there is less fear that the Fed might raise interest rates. When the Fed raises interest rates, these currencies start crashing even more because, as we all know, all that cheap dough that the Fed funneled into the system through quantitative easing was hot money borrowed here, brought over to those emerging markets, and boosted them up. Now they have to pay back all that debt. And how are they going to pay back the debt when their currencies are declining and their debt is based in dollars? So as their currencies decline, their debt is based in dollars. They have to pay it back with more money. And now, to stop inflation, because as your currency declines, of course, you're more to buy things, they're raising interest rates. And that means that that slows down the economy even more. So it is the perfect storm, a golden storm, as I see it. And that's why I'm bullish on gold. And I believe that's why gold prices continue to rise.
Exactly. And, you know, you pointed out the Brazilian real, among others. And then we've also seen the Argentine peso under incredible pressure. Gold holders protecting their purchasing power by as much as 100% from peak to trough, if you want to get technical here. And several other countries around the world. These are countries that are nearly there with the top echelon, comparable with the United States, the EU, Japan, China, Russia, Brazil, as you mentioned, India.
Yeah, how about Indonesia? Look, I mean, this is what, 100, it's one of the largest populated countries in the world. And look at their rupiah. You know, look at the Malaysian ringgit. It's one after another. The other thing is, of course, I was talking earlier about deflation. And no, it's not deflation. It's depression. That's why commodity prices are so low. Now, think about it. Commodity prices are hitting, you know, what are they on average back down to 1999 levels? But gold isn't. Gold's moving up. So the commodity prices are going down, and people are blaming it on China's slowdown. No. China's slowing down. It's a global slowdown. So of course China's slowing down because China's, you know, a great manufacturer. So if they're not manufacturing things because the world isn't buying it, buying what they're manufacturing, of course they're going to slow down. You look at the numbers that came out, you know, just this week. You know, Chinese exports were down again, and imports were down 20%. Imports were down 20%. You're looking at the luxury markets over there. Rents in Hong Kong, by the way, in the luxury sectors are down some 40% because the Chinese aren't buying like they used to. So this is a global slowdown. So in a time of economic and geopolitical uncertainty, you know, gold is the safe haven, as I see. And again, I don't give financial advice. I'm a trend forecaster. I don't tell people what to do or what to believe. We're just saying this is the way we see it, and this is why.
Gerald Celente, please tell people more about the Trends Journal, as well as any other contact information or any other interesting and must-attend event.
Well, the Trends Journal, of course, you can find out all about it by going to trendsresearch.com, trendsresearch.com. To learn more about the conference we just had, go to the conference page. And every day, by the way, every Monday through Friday, we do a 15-minute broadcast, Trends in the News. And every week we send out a Trends Alert. And we have a Trends Monthly between the quarterly Trends Journal. And all, you ready for this? $99 a year. And if you're having financial difficulties, which we know people are having, there's a discount request page. Go there, tell us what, you know, is going on, and we'll do the best to make it available to you because we want to do our very best to help people prepare for the dangers ahead and seize the opportunities that we see as trends before they hit the mainstream.
We appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you very much for having me on, Chris.
If
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.